Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 113 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Delighted to say that today we've been joined by fellow Evertonian, the man who was heavily behind the banner at the Merseyside Derby in relation to no more knives in this city, and that is Peter McFarlane. Peter, how are you, mate?
I'm okay, thanks, mate. Yeah, I'm just, a thing I'm still trying to get over what happened on Wednesday night in terms of the football, but, on a personal note, it was great to see the support for the banner that we got together. It was such a horrific thing that happened in our city. So we wanted to make a statement and get a point across that knives are not welcome in our city. At the end of the day, there's too much going on at the moment. A poor young girl, Ava White, has lost her life. She was only 12 years old, and we felt that it was important to get that message across. So
100%, mate. Yeah, it was something which was fantastic to see. Obviously, the fans come together. We know, obviously, within our city, it's commonplace. You know, when there's a message that has to be sent, and such a tragic incident occurs, that people will always come together and fight against those things. And like you say, really, really horrific incident that's gone on. It was nice to see the two clubs, obviously yourself, get something out there on the day, which was obviously a really emotional time for all of the family and friends involved as well. So hats off to yourself for sorting that out. Thought it was fantastic.
Totally concur with that, by the way. Totally concur with that, mate. Fantastic. My dad's a retired policeman, and he sent me a picture of it. But I mean, it struck a chord with him. You are right. Raising awareness for that in our city is so important. Poor kid, only 12 years old as well. It's unbearable, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, the way it sort of came around was my friend Tim. He's actually a big Red, and I used to work with him. So he actually makes banners, you see. So I knew he was able to sort of make one. But I contacted him on the Friday morning and said, listen, is there any chance we could get something together? I sent him a design idea and said to him, I think it'd be good. Obviously, with him being a Red as well, I said, with the derby coming up, it'd be good for both teams to sort of get the message across. It was something that we could sort of come together on. Obviously, a derby is always going to be, it's all about the rivalry, and it's all about sort of, I'd said previously, it's like blood and thunder, and, the build-up to the match is always going to be about the banter and taking the mick out of each other. And even during the game, you know that the atmosphere is going to be sort of toxic. It's going to be horrible. But this was something that both sets of fans could come together with. And I think it was, in terms of the message, I think that's why it was important to do it for the derby. Eventually, it ended up being up in the Gladys Street as well, which I thought was again quite poignant. The fact that there was a Liverpool badge up in the Gladys Street, you know, that was it sort of showed that, you know, the sort of level of how important the message was, and the Evertonians who held the banner up as well. You know, it was great to see that. Everton Football Club were great with us straight away. They contacted me as soon as I put a tweet out. You know, within an hour, Everton contacted me and said that they were more than happy to support. They actually offered to pay for the flag, but Tim refused. So Tim, who actually made it, said no. You know, it's okay. I want to make this donation. You know, that was his contribution towards it. But Everton were fantastic. The initial idea was to have the flag between the home and away supporters, so we were going to have it like sort of going across the cordon. Unfortunately, after having spoken to Everton, because of the things like there was like COVID regulations and things like that, and to do with the actual segregation, the police as well had you know, they have their segregation in place, and they said that because of all that, it would have been better to move it to a different part. There was an option to potentially drop it from the top tier to the bottom, but there were cameras up there, so it would have covered the cameras. So again, that wasn't a viable option. So in the end, we decided that the Gladys Street would be best, and thankfully it was well respected, and the message thankfully got across.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic to see that, and rightly so. Obviously, got the coverage that it totally deserved in the build up, obviously on match day as well, with obviously the game being live on Amazon Prime. So fantastic, mate. Yeah, really, really, really good. And obviously we pass on our condolences to the family and friends as well of Ava White. Unfortunately, we've got to discuss the Merseyside derby. And one thing we're struggling with at this moment in time on the podcast, and I'm sure all fans will be in agreement, is actually discussing Everton in any kind of positive light. We massively struggled yet again against obviously one of the best sides in the league, which we knew was going to be a tough game. When we spoke about the derby before the game, I don't think any one of us was too positive in terms of what our prediction was. I certainly went for a defeat. I think I said 3-1, can't remember. So I wasn't too far away. And it's sad that we think that way when obviously normally in a home Merseyside derby, you would expect us to be competitive. But Peter, I'll come to you first, if I may. What were your thoughts of the game? Because a lot of things went wrong, didn't they? But who was to blame for that performance?
I mean, I think both the manager and the players in different ways, and not so much the obvious ones, but I think first of all, when you see the team sheet, I think everyone's first reaction is that's not 4-4-2. And I'd say to anyone listening to the podcast now, my question for you would be: when you saw the team sheet, how many times did you check it? How many times did you read that sheet and think, no, he's not gone 4-4-2 there? Where's Richarlison playing? Who's the 10? Who's going to be behind? Because for me, I don't know if other people watched it on Amazon Prime, but Ali McCoy was spot on. The amount of times he said, look, if Rafa's gone with four in midfield here, we could get killed down the flanks. This could be a massacre. What, you know, what's he doing and why would you take that gamble? And we sort of finished the last podcast talking a bit about, you know, he's got this reputation for being incredibly tactically shrewd and, you know, original and switched on and, you know, quite clever. And he just seems to be making some bonkers calls the past at least four or five games. And I think I said last time we spoke that, like, if you're winning games or even performing well, you know, people can sort of see the vision, then you get away with it, for want of a better expression. But when you're getting beaten 4-1 by your local rivals at home, and you're barely laying a glove on them, you know, let's be right. If you look at the game as a whole, those first 15 minutes, I thought this, you know, I'm going to struggle to watch this. Your free header on a corner, Matip. You know, my telly was nearly in the street. If you're playing Sunday League football, you're screaming. And I think I sent a message to you guys saying, these are, never mind Everton Football Club, never mind this being, you know, being the so-called, you know, fourth most successful team in, you know, the best country for football in the world. If this was your mate, not picking someone up, you'd scream at him. If you're playing football down the park and someone does that, you'd want to go home. And I just can't get my head around that. And I just can't get my head around that. We can't solve problems like that. And you're so right, Mike. It turns you off football. You almost feel like giving up on it sometimes, because I think that the players are really letting the club down, and there just seems to be a mismatch throughout the club. I'm sure we'll come on to that. But nothing's fitting right, and you can understand why the fans were so upset, and maybe why they reacted the way they did, and why fans are confronting players. I'm not condoning it, but people want answers. And I think people want answers to understandable basic questions, don't they? Like, what are you doing? What's going on? You know, and whoever communicates to the fans, you know, whether the players have to change something and be professional and just get on with things, whether the manager changes his approach a little bit, whether the club come out and make a statement, you know, somebody needs to get more in touch with the fans and sort of try and reconnect us all again, because if not, I think we all know where this is going to head, don't we?
Sorry, Pete, I have to agree with you on the formation side of things. I cannot get my head around, literally, how he didn't go with three in midfield against Liverpool. I just can't get my head around that. And we did the same, cast your mind back to the Wolves game, Molyneux. We went with two in midfield that day as well. And if you remember the first 20, 30 minutes of that game, it could have been five then. I felt sorry for Alan and Decore. We all know Alan, right? He's a combative, he loves to get stuck in, but he hasn't got the legs. You know what I mean? He hasn't got the legs to cover the grass. He's not like Idrissa Gueye, you can probably, you know, cover the work of two people. So why on earth would you go into that game and not play three in midfield? I just cannot get my head around that.
Well, exactly. Watford as well. When we go two up against Watford, two men up front against Watford, and then we go 2-1, Richarlison scores that header. Everybody can see. We're all screaming out. Pack the midfield. Put another man in there. We're getting overrun. And then they score five. So you think, well, what are Liverpool going to do to us? And you know, what have you done differently to rectify that problem?
Yeah, Liverpool must have been licking their lips. It wasn't just the corner, the header from Matip, by the way. Jota put in a cross for Salah, who just about missed it. Salah then had a pullback, which he had a shot on, a great save by Pickford. So you know, the writing was on the wall before Henderson scored. You know what I mean? I mean, I think in his idea, what he was looking to do was to play that and then try and bring Townsend in, you know, in off the right hand side, and he can make it a three out of possession, but it just didn't work. It just didn't work at all. For me, he should have started. Mike, you put the team at what we thought it would be. He should have started with Delph sitting, even if Delph played 60 minutes. Just put Delph in a six and have Decore and Allen ahead of him. Pack the midfield out, make us hard to play through, and then, you know, then go from there. Then, you know what I mean? And that's what he had to do. And ironically, you know, we scored a good goal to get us back in the game at 2-1. Going in at 2-1, you'd have taken it after the first 20 minutes. And then the second half, the first 15, 20 minutes, obviously he's changed it slightly, put Townsend in there in the middle. All of a sudden, we look completely a lot more solid. Liverpool didn't have any joy as they did in the first half. And ironically, the first shot they had really was Salah's goal. And that came from a cock-up. So really, you know, if anyone was going to score another goal at 2-1, it was probably us. It was probably us that were going to do it. You know, so it was just complete and utter suicide from the manager there. You mentioned, you know, he's renowned for being tactically astute. I'll be brutally honest, there's not much I've seen yet that's made me go, that's clever, that. That's clever. I see what he's done there. There's not much. I mean, you know, we talk about the derby when we went, obviously, there was no fans, when we went at Anfield, and everyone was lauding Ancelotti for how he played Coleman, you know, as almost as a, he dropped into a five, didn't he, out of possession. But then in possession, you know, so we went from a back four in possession, and out of possession went into a five just to double up on the wide side. And everyone's like, oh, that's quite a clever thing, what he did with Sheamus there. You know, and everyone's like, well, he's obviously one of the best managers in the world, so what do we expect? I've yet to see that from Rafa. I've yet to see it. If anything, I've been disappointed by how naive he was, like I said, against Wolves, against Watford, you mentioned, Pete, and then obviously in the derby, the first half an hour there. I mean, Klopp must have been thinking, Jesus, this is we can score four or five here in the first 20 minutes, get the game done. I mean, I watched some of the Liverpool-Wolves game yesterday. That's how we should have played. OK, Wolves didn't really carry a threat, granted, but they certainly didn't look like they were going to score. Yeah, I mean, and that's how, for me, that's how you beat this Liverpool team. Now, you've just got to basically take your medicine, sit off, make yourself come compact and hard to play through, and have something on the counter-attack. And that's how Atletico Madrid knocked them out the Champions League last year, playing exactly that way and having the quality when you do win it back that you can play through them. And unfortunately, obviously, we didn't really have the quality to play through, and we showed it in spurts with Damari Gray and things like that. But that's how you beat that Liverpool team.
100%. Like you say, I put out a predicted lineup, and I think most people, well, everyone I saw was in total agreement about having a midfield three. It was definitely the way to go. I would have had Richarlison essentially up front on his own, with obviously the pace of Townsend, Gray, or even Gordon on the either side of him. So it was absolutely bizarre to see us go in there with two midfielders. It made no sense to me whatsoever. What are your thoughts, Peter? Because obviously, you know, we're all in agreement there in terms of the starting 11, and we saw the issues that not having a midfield three brought about, especially in those first 20-25 minutes when we were getting torn apart. Did you feel the same? Did you think it should have been a midfield three?
Absolutely, and I think one of the big issues for me was when we've got those two men up front, and like, it creates so much more space for them to come out at us. So we, you know, Rafa Benitez came out and said about how our running stats were so much better than Liverpool's. Well, that's because we were chasing the ball more, because they were able to basically get themselves into positions and wait for us to come running at them. And it just fed into their hands. I mean, to be honest with you, I actually came out to the ground at the end and thought, I'm actually relieved that's only 4-1. And I can't believe that was my, you know, genuinely, I felt that Liverpool took their foot off the gas. I think by the end of it, they were just passing the ball around. They didn't go for the jugular. They really could have massively embarrassed us there, even more so than they did. I felt that, you know, when the fourth goal went in, even though it was sort of later on, I think the last 10 minutes, they just sat off. You know, a friend of mine after the game said something which summed it up for me, and it was such a sad indictment of where Everton are at the moment. And he just said, quite simply, Liverpool have bigger fish to fry. And it was like, and they played like that. And that's why they didn't feel the need to come out and really embarrass us. I think that, you know, when you look at the quality, every single one of their players, is, you know, the quality on the ball, that they're able to switch the play so quickly because they've got the fullbacks bombing on, and they're able to, you know, basically draw you in. Rafa Benitez was talking about us running around all over the place. Well, it's all very well and good running, but if you're actually playing into their hands by doing that, you're actually leaving space open for them to actually to go out and play. And when they've got, so, you know, the quality players that they do have, who don't just have, you know, the quality on the ball, but they have pace as well, and they have the movements. It just totally played into their hands. So, you know, I totally agree. If we needed to pack the midfield, we needed to hit them on the break. But unfortunately, as a, you know, this very experienced manager of ours apparently disagreed.
Yeah, mate, I totally agree with that. There's nothing worse. Everyone's on about press, aren't they? Now everyone wants to be a pressing team. You know, they've seen it obviously with Klopp, with Tuchel a bit at Chelsea. You know, it's just in vogue football now. It's gegenpressing press. You know, United have just got Ralf Rangnick in, who obviously, you know, Klopp idolises and things like that. You know what I mean? And that's the way everyone wants to play. But there's nothing worse than a half-arsed press. or a press that's not been fully implemented, you know, being well coached. Because like you just said there, you know, they'll sit in a triangle, wait for Rondon to sprint at you, and we'll just knock it round you like that, like you're a child chasing after the ball. Do you know what I mean? And that's what they did. There's nothing worse. You know, I was watching Liverpool up close, and you know, and you could see it in the flesh there. They're literally like such a well-drilled machine. There's literally like loads of triggers going on all over the pitch. Loads of triggers going on. So as soon as he gets it, bam, swarm. As soon as he gets it, bam, swarm. They're all over the ball. And it's so well drilled. You could see basically what it looked like on the pitch. It looked like a team with basically a manager who's been there for 5 or 6 years and completely drilled a system into a load of players who've been carefully selected through, like, you know, money ball stats, whatever you want to say. And they all know their system, and it's literally like a Rolls Royce. Literally, it really is the way it works. And then you look at our team, we look like a team that, yeah, we've had 5 managers in the last 5 years while you've had one. Do you know what I mean? And that's what it looked like. It looked like one team that had been so well drilled and another that just didn't really know what they were doing. And I hate to say that, you know, because obviously we're Evertonians, but, you know, they just, you can see why they're destroying teams left, right and centre at the minute. When you see them in the flesh, I was just like, wow. Like that first 30 minutes. I mean, that Salah goal, I mean, like, it came out of nowhere that. You know, Townsend cuts in off the right, and I'm thinking, have a dig, son, have a dig. And he tried to cross it. Obviously, he got headed out, went straight out to the midfield to Fabinho, straight to Henderson, straight down the line, and it's in the back of the net. I'm thinking, what, we've gone from on the edge of their box about to have a crack with Townsend to literally being in our net within like 10 seconds? It's absolutely insane. I couldn't believe it. But yeah, I mean, the golfing class, sadly, was there for all to see. And the weird thing is, and I've heard a few fans say this, I don't know what you guys have heard, but I've heard a few fans, I wasn't even angry. You know, you'd be at the game, and you'd just be like, you'd be absolutely fuming with what's going on in front of you. I wasn't even angry at all. I was almost like accepting it. And maybe like apathy is probably worse than anger. Do you know what I mean? I was just sitting there, like you said, that, you know, I was accepting 4-1. And even at 2-1, I was like, I'd probably take 2-1 here. I'd take 2-1. You know what I mean? Weirdly, you know, I've never ever been to a derby game in my life and thought, yeah, you know what, I'll probably take... But such was the gulf between the two teams. You were almost thinking that way, weren't you?
And that's the really sad thing about it, isn't it? The fact that you're looking at damage limitation and you're thinking to yourself, well, what would you accept? And you should never ever accept any kind of defeat. You know, we said it in the past, defeats are more acceptable if you perform to a particular level and you can see that, you know, the players have been committed to the performance, they put a lot into it. I don't buy at the moment the manager's comments about the players being, you know, hugely committed and putting everything in and, you know, working really hard. I don't buy into that, because I think if you do that as a collective 11, then you're always likely to get something from games and we're not picking anything up. So for me, that suggests that people aren't putting it all in my opinion. But I think the more frustrating thing at the moment is, especially in a game against Liverpool, are the mistakes. How many times are in these high-profile games, and even, well, any game at the moment, are we seeing players making mistakes, which are costing us? At 2-1, we were probably slightly on top in the game. You know, we just had the free kick, hadn't we, which went out for a corner. And then it all stems from that corner, where it goes in literally across the floor from Andros Townsend, gets cleared out. The Maigre then knocks the ball back to Seamus Coleman. It wasn't a great pass. In my head there, that's me. The ball's getting smashed into the Bullens Road if I'm Seamus Coleman. Just smash the ball into the Bullens Road. Don't try and chest it or knee it. Just hit the ball away. You know, what are we doing? It's all about the thought process and making the right decision. We make a mistake. Salah's away. He can't touch him. And, you know, once that third goal goes in, that's game over. That was the most pivotal part of the game for me. It was all on a little bit of a knife edge. We've got ourselves back in. We've shown a little bit of something for, say, 15 minutes or so. And then we throw it away with individual mistakes. And you can't do it against any Premier League side. But you can't do it against them when you've got Mo Salah, who scores 30, 35 goals every single season. And it's bread and butter for him. And that's a frustrating thing for me, is that individuals are making mistakes time and time and time again. Go back to Watford. Go back to the Watford game. It all stems from that, where we capitulated. And that's been the biggest turning point in our season for me, is that game where we're winning with 12 minutes to go. Should have won the game. And we can see 5 goals. And we walk away with our tail in between our legs. And we've never, ever recovered from that. and that's the fragility of this squad. But what do you think, Pete, in terms of the mistake that obviously Coleman made was massive? I think that even going for the fourth goal, I thought Alan was really poor in terms of his defending or lack of defending. And then I thought Jordan Pickford was also poor because, as a goalkeeper for me, okay, he's finished it well, but you shouldn't be getting beat at your near post. How frustrating are these mistakes that we're seeing?
No, you're absolutely right. There's almost like a culture of switch off, isn't there? And again, it feels like basic stuff. You know, you concede, you make a mistake, don't let your head go down, keep your standards up, you know, keep working. I mean, I felt a little bit for Coleman because I thought it was a terrible pass to him. You know, it was a horror pass, and I think it's easy to watch that on the telly and say, oh, you know, just smash it out or whatever. But look, you made a mistake. And I think maybe the bigger mistake for me is, you know, once you've made a mistake like that, just drag him down. Just pull him down. Don't let him run, because, like you said, the moment he's got daylight and he's in front of goal in a position like that, he's going to score. But I agree as well. I thought, you know, Pickford was poor, and I didn't think Pickford had his best game. I thought he made some important saves, but at the same time, you know, made some strange decisions as well. And with Alan, it's hard to know how much of this is frustration in the players, because the players clearly don't look like they're enjoying the football. And, you know, it's hard to know how much they are buying into the tactics and the system they're being asked to go out and, you know, try and set out. And it's hard to know what the solution is, because the longer we play like this, the more untenable Rafa's position becomes. And I know the board have come out and seemed to, or at least Mashiri's come out and seem to have backed him. But it's the Arsenal game for me. We lose that. How can we keep him in? Because it's, again, it's about standards, isn't it? And I'm not saying big dunk is the answer. I'm not saying not getting all romantic. Let's make big dunk the manager. But if you think back to when he came in, the jump in standards, basic standards in terms of work rate, you know, basic things, you know, he came in and all of a sudden we're man marking again. We're winning battles. We're winning second balls. You know, teams are having a difficult time against us. Teams are feeling uncomfortable. And like when we beat Chelsea 3-1, Chelsea came to play lovely football and rip us to shreds. And we didn't allow it to happen. We bullied them. We were strong. And again, that's the bare minimum, isn't it? You think for any football side, but especially for Everton. And you're so right. When you see standards like that slip, you just feel like going home. And you do feel like confronting the players saying, well, look, I'm not a professional footballer, but if I'm in the centre of midfield in an Everton shirt, I'm running and I'm putting tackles in and I'm not giving up. So why are you doing it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a conundrum that, because for me, I mean, look, you're saying they're not enjoying the football. When you lose 7 out of 8 games, you're not enjoying your football, no matter who your manager is, aren't you? You know what I mean? Because obviously that's a horrible run to be on. The players will be, you know, absolutely bereft of confidence as well. But I thought, in the real fact, I thought they did put a shift in that game. I'm not saying it was any quality, by the way, but they did put a shift in. I mean, the Rondon in that game before he pulled up with cramp was what I would expect we were going to get, you know, from the get-go. Now, I appreciate he wasn't fit. I understand that, but you know, some of the games I went to and saw him, he was just like loping around as if like it's a testimonial. You know what I mean? And that's what I was expecting him to run around and bully people. You know, push Van Dijk over, you know, make sure he's there. And okay, look, he didn't win any headers. And I don't think he's going to ever win a header, to be honest. But the point is, he was still putting himself about, and he was still trying to, you know, causing them issues, you know, at least putting them under some sort of pressure. I thought he held up the ball better as well. You know what I mean? And it allowed us to, you know, build up from there in terms of attack. What I was more disappointed with, like we said before, was how he was tactically naive going with that. And then when he changed it, all of a sudden we looked a lot more solid. Okay, there was still a real lack of quality when we got the ball. I felt at times we were just hoofing it without even any thought of to try and look. Let's slow it down here. Let's try and keep possession. You know, we were just kicking it into space, weren't we? Do you know what I mean?
But this is a real lack of quality. Hand in hand, don't they? It makes the performance inconsistent. So I mean, I completely agree with you. I think the past two games, Rondon's been massively improved, and hopefully it's because he's getting fitter and he's, you know, by all accounts, it's important to him to, you know, to show that he's doing a good job for the club and for the fans. But then, like Peter was saying, you look at the pressing, and it's like a bit, well, you know, are we pressing? Are we closing down? You know, what are we doing? And I think then players make mistakes and players look half-arsed. And
I think the fans have kicked Rondon up the arse, Pete. I think the fans have made it well known to him. You know, he apparently stormed off the pitch the other day, didn't he? And rightly so, the fans should do that. You can't just walk around at Goodison Park, mate, or anywhere, whether you're playing at, you know, there at home or away. You can't just, you know, walk around without putting a shift in. You know what I mean? You've got to make yourself. The fans, you know, in terms of quality, I mean, we didn't idolise, but we applauded Dennis Strakwalesi, who was quite possibly the worst player I've ever seen. You know what I mean? But the fact he physically ran around, though, Everton fans will. You know, they'll give you time for that. You know, in terms of quality, you can't really teach that. But in terms of endeavour, you can. You know what I mean? So, and I genuinely think, you know, Everton fans will give you a bit of leeway if you do put a shift in. But like I said before, the golfing quality was there for all to see. There for all to see. And our worst nightmares were envisioned, weren't they, in the fact that, you know, 3-1 or 4-1 or whatever it was, they were, you know, singing the Rafa Benitez song. And that, sadly, you know, we'll come on to Rafa in a second, whether we should get rid of him, whether we should not. There are obviously bigger problems above him. But, I mean, that was always going to be the issue. That was always going to be the issue in terms of whether you wanted him or whether you didn't. It would only take a period of like this, which is worse than we would have thought, and then everyone would be on top of him. And that's where we are now. The fans are totally disengaged. We're not playing great football. We've got injuries. It's like the worst concoction possible, isn't it?
I think our biggest issue in terms of our football is we just don't have any kind of identity with how we're actually setting out to play. When you look at that Liverpool side, you know, we're missing a couple of key players. Like, let's not forget, we are missing Yerry Mina and we are missing Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and Decore is just coming back to fitness. You know, I can accept that you know, we're not going to see the best of our team. But what I can't accept is when you look at other teams when they deal with injuries, because they have a firm identity that runs throughout the club, it doesn't matter who plays in that system. They all know how to work that system and they all know exactly what they're doing. I'll go back to when we played Liverpool in that FA Cup game, when they played basically their kids against us and played us off the park. You know, or well, they didn't play us off the park, but you could still see that identity within their play. And when you know, I read things about how, you know, only just now in the last few weeks, apparently the under-23s are now being told to play the same formation as the first team. That to me says, it's we've got a director of football there, Marcel Brands, and I would like to see where if you're going to swap and change your manager constantly, at least have your identity within the club, have a constant. If you've got a director of football, let him direct the football. Get that identity throughout the club. And that way, at least we know that when we do have injuries, when we do have players who are out, if we do lose people because, you know, someone comes in and buys one of our best players, at least we know that we've got players who can come in and fit that system. And also, we can start to actually put our mark onto games instead of reacting to the teams that we're playing against. Because it's all very well and good trying to counter your opposition, but if you concentrate too much on trying to counter the opposition, you can't actually show your own personality. And the players will always be sort of second guessing the tactics that they're going to be using every week in, week out. And you're not able to actually make any kind of impact on a game because you're reacting to other people rather than being the ones who are, you know, taking the fight to the opposition. So I think it's massively important that we get our identity back. And whether that, you know, when you look back to like the sort of dogs of war, that sort of mentality where we were just, you know, we just wouldn't get beaten, you know, we wouldn't just give up. We might get beat, but we wouldn't give up. You knew what you were going to get from the dogs of war. We knew what we'd get under David Moyes, that we'd be very tight at the back, that we'd, you know, we'd hit the box early. We'd get the ball into the box. We'd have midfielders who'd come in and break. You know, we had the likes of Tim Cahill, Mikel Arteta, who'd always be sniffing around the box. Roberto Martinez, you could say that we, you know, we pass it across the back. It was all about possession-based football. Sometimes to his detriment, it meant that we were very open, you know, to conceding goals. But at least we knew what we were about. I look at Everton over the last 3 or 4 years, and honestly, I cannot tell you what we are actually trying to achieve. And that's under a number of different managers. We need stability. And if that means that we need to get a new manager in, but give them time. You need to give a manager time to put that identity on the side and throughout the entire squad.
Totally agree, mate. That's a really good point. Well made there. I think continuity is the word there. Continuity. Liverpool look like a team of continuity. They've got an identity. They've got a structure. They've got a philosophy, and then they've recruited to that philosophy. And you look at City under Guardiola. You look at Potter under Brighton. You know what I mean? And on a lower level. You know what I mean? And that's the thing, you know, there was heavy rumours linking us to Potter. And if Potter came in, we'd have to accept this is a 3 to 5 year journey, right? We might be absolutely garbage while he tries to find the players to fit the way he wants to play. But if, like Pete said before, if the board and the hierarchy communicate that to us and say, look, there's going to be ups and downs, but this is where we are now. This is our philosophy. This is our recruitment strategy. This is where we want to be. Just be prepared for the bad times, because the good times are going to come. And I do agree with you there, because then what happens is, then if the manager does go, like you said, it's a lot less of an upheaval if somebody else comes in, because that's the way we play. That's the way we play football. And that for me is the key. I mean, Ranić, I don't know whether any of you guys saw his presser the other day. He spoke brilliantly. And obviously he's very well thought of in the game. And apparently we did interview him and we turned him down, didn't we? All he had to do was tell Bill that story about how he went to Goodison in the 80s when he was living down south, and Bill would have been wetting himself. But to be fair, though, Ranić there talked brilliantly about, you know, football now, it's all about quick wins, essentially, was what he was paraphrasing. Whereas teams, what they need to do is they need to stick with managers and allow managers to build a team, build an identity and build a philosophy. Sadly, in the world of instant gratification that we are now, a lot of managers don't get that time unless, obviously, they're winning things. And if you cast your mind back to when Klopp came in and took over Hodgson, that wasn't a great squad. But it took him 18 months, 2 years to get that identity across and bring the players in to start trying to shape that. Didn't just happen overnight. And it won't happen overnight for Ranić at United. Okay, they'll still move up the table because they've got quality players and they'll have them set up. But it'll still take time. And for me, if we are going to bring a manager in, we need to bring in someone, I'm not saying it's Potter, but whatever, who will give us that identity and that style of play and that philosophy. Because, you know, the problem is with the brand situation, you got a lot of stick after the game. We've probably all seen that video clip. I do feel for him in a way, because there's clear issues in the fact that he's not being allowed to do his job. It's clear. I mean, you know, he pretty much said it when he responded to the fan, didn't he? It's not just the players. You know, what's he alluding to there? I think we can all read between the lines there. What do you think, mate?
I mean, where we currently are, like you say, I mean, continuity is key, and we haven't had continuity for a long, long, long time. We always say it. The last time we had that kind of continuity was under David Moyes. And it's sad to see where we are after the investment that's being made, after the number of managers that have come in, the number of players that have come in, the number of different playing styles that we've had. You know, to be where we are is absolutely appalling, in my opinion. We know that money doesn't fix everything, and Everton are a prime example of that. But money can certainly help if you invest the money correctly. That's the key. So there's a lot of questions to be asked in terms of the decision makers at the club, and, you know, who's doing what, which, you know, I think those waters have certainly been muddy when it comes to Marcel Brands. Are the right people in the right jobs? Another question which needs to be answered. I think the disconnect now between the players, the club and the fans is probably as big as I've ever remembered it, to be honest with you. Not certainly in my adult life, that's for sure. But obviously, we're going to discuss after a short break the planned process from fans at the Arsenal game. So we've got to this point now where fans feel the need to actually make their voices heard. And stage a protest at Goodison Park. So let's have a short break and then we'll pick things off in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. we were going to pick things up, as we said before the break, in relation to the planned protest at Goodison Park on Monday night. Obviously, Arsenal are in town for the game. There's been a lot of fan unrest in recent weeks. It's probably started off with the banning of the pier at Brentford. It was probably the first big thing that's happened. A lot was made of that through the media. We know the Athletic picked things up. It was in all newspapers, national sports media, things like that. That's not gone away. That appeared at Goodison Park again for the Merseyside derby. And obviously, since the defeat to Liverpool, you know, fans have come together collectively in a number of major fan groups and decided that action is going to be taken. Now, we've discussed it briefly ourselves over the course of the last few days. And there's certainly, I'd say there's certainly a split in the camp in terms of opinion on this, which is, listen, that's what it's all about. It's all about open dialogue and discussion. And I'd be interested, Peter, to hear what are your thoughts on the actual action that's being taken. Do you agree with the action, first of all? And if not, what you think might work maybe better?
I'm going to sound like I'm sitting on the fence a little bit here, because I'm going to sort of, I have two opinions on it. The main thing I will say is that whether you agree with it or not, whether you're going to stay in your seat or whether you're going to leave, the worst thing we can do as a fan base is divide. And, you know, we might physically divide in a sense that when people walk out, there will be people who stay. But the worst thing we can start doing is having a go at each other. Because I've seen a lot of things on social media the last few days where you've got people who are saying you're less of a blue because you're staying, or you're less of a blue because you're leaving. Listen, at the end of the day, people have different ways of expressing themselves and expressing their anger and expressing how they want to support the club. We're all Evertonians at the end of the day, and everyone wants what's best for Everton. I totally understand the reasons behind the protest. I've actually, you know, having read the statements as well, to be honest, I thought that the statement that was released was spot on. I thought that it's hard to argue with. I was very worried about what I didn't want to happen was I didn't want people to go too hard on Farhad Moshiri, because I personally believe he's been massively let down. I can understand that there's probably an element of naivety in terms of putting his trust in possibly the wrong people. But I personally think the Farhad Moshiri has been a breath of fresh air for Everton in terms of the investment. We went so long without having any kind of, you know, investment, without any real plan of what to do in terms of our future. With the Bramley Moore doc, obviously, you know, progressing, I think it's so important that the Farhad Moshiri stays at Everton. I do agree, though, that there has to be some kind of change, structural change. You know, it's not just about the results on the pitch. It's what seems to be happening off it. It's when you're only able to spend £1.7 million in a transfer window, and when you look at the squad that we've brought together, having spent £500 million, obviously things aren't right. I think it's very sort of revisionist to sort of say that it, you know, to sort of put the blame firmly at Marcel Brands, because I think when Brands came in, a lot of that money had already been spent on a lot of rubbish signings. I think that Steve Walsh and Ronald Koeman between them set us back years because of their attitude towards transfers. But I totally agree that people should be able to protest and should be able to show their discontent. I mean, there's other reasons why people might not be able to join in. For example, I mean, I personally won't be walking out. My dad's 70. And he struggles to get up the stairs at the moment. So once he's in his seat, he's in his seat, and he won't fancy walking out after 27 minutes and then, you know, and coming back in. So I'll probably stay with him. And that's not to say I won't be supporting the people who will be walking out. But yeah, I mean, I wish everyone luck, you know, with the protest. At the end of the day, that's all we want, is for Everton to do well. All we want is the best for our football club. You know, managers come and go, even owners come and go, directors of football, you know, they sort of don't matter in the grand scheme of things. Fans are here forever. We're the ones who are left, who are left with the football club once everyone else has gone. So we'll always have the football club's best interest at heart. And yeah, hats off to anyone who's looking to organise this. All I can say is I respect their decision.
And I think what you said there is very much where I'm currently sitting with things in terms of, you know, we've, in the day, it's our club, and if people aren't happy, we've got a right to protest in any way, shape or form. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't make anyone more or less of a blue if they choose to take part or they don't want to take part, because like you say, the collective message from everyone is we want better. We shouldn't be in this position. Mistakes have clearly been made by a number of people. And we want answers. We want better communication. We probably want change, to be perfectly honest. I think most people would agree that change needs to come into the club in terms of roles and positions and people who are involved and things like that. I think it's sad to see fans feel that they have to take this action. I really do. I think when this kind of thing happens, you know there's something massively, massively wrong. You should be able to put your trust in people who run the football club. I think a lot of the sort of national sports media or football media would have you believe that we potentially got no right to do this, and you know, let people get on with their job. And I think that's been what the problem has been. People have been allowed to get on with a job without being questioned or certainly not communicating with the fans in terms of direction of the club, individuals' roles within the club. And they're answerable to no one. You know, they're putting AGMs online again. You know, that for me shows that we're a closed book. You know, it's a lot better if you've got people within the room answering questions, and you get it in a true feel of what, you know, shareholders and the fan base actually think. But yeah, I mean, I'm totally on board in terms of, you know, I think fans have got to take it upon themselves to do something. This kind of thing is not for everyone. Like you said, Peter, some will struggle or be unable to actually take part in it. Maybe there's a bit of a safety fear as well, potentially, because if thousands upon thousands go under the main stand in one of those little pockets of where the refreshment places are, there's not enough room. There's not enough room for some people. So, you know, whether it's going to work on a mass scale that's probably wanted, I just don't know. But I'd say my hat's off to those who've actually took it upon themselves to try and organise something. I really do. But Pete, what are your thoughts? Because I think you're probably a little bit more maybe the other way than what me and Peter are.
Yeah, I think I've got quite a strong opinion on this. And I mean, I completely agree with everything Peter said there, by the way, about the issues with the club and how it's come about and how unlucky Mashiri's been. I think he's been exceptionally unlucky. And I think, you know, Evertonians need to be careful what they wish for. I have no objection to fan action whatsoever. And I'm not saying this is the same thing at all, but if you cast your mind back to when the club tried to redesign the crest, I think it was about 2013-14, and the designer just made a complete pig's ear of it. It was a mess. And the fans kicked off and said, look, this doesn't represent us. We don't like it. You've not involved us. And the club listened and they redesigned it. And we all love the crest again. It's our crest. I'm not saying what's happening now is anywhere near as simple as that, but the problem for me now is the issue with the club is so complex. What are you protesting about? That's my issue, you know. And I had quite a heated conversation with a fan the other day that went something along the lines of this, where they said, well, look, if you don't leave your seat, you're accepting mediocrity. You're just going to sit there and applaud the players for playing like this. I said, well, no. I said, but if you're getting out of your seat and leaving, what do you want? What do you mean? I said, well, what do you want? What do you want to happen? Well, the club need to know that this isn't acceptable. Well, do you think the club don't know that? Well, Mashiri needs to take a step back. Well, okay, what does that mean? What do you want him to do? Do you want him out? No, I don't want him out. Don't get me wrong. Well, what do you want? What do you want? And this is the problem. Some fans, for some reason, want brands out. And again, do we really know? You know, do we really know what's going on behind the scenes? So, you know, some fans seem strangely to me to want Mashiri out. Some people go for Bill Kenwright. It's almost like, you know, different fans have a different sort of figurehead who's to blame for everything that's going on. And I think that's my that's my worry. You're only going to end up frustrated if you leave your seat and there's a mass protest and then nothing seems to change, or things are changed that you're not happy with. Like if Mashiri walked, if Mashiri held his hands up and said, well, you know, the fans clearly aren't happy, I'm going to sell my shares, off I go. Yeah, what proportion of the fan base would be happy with that? And I think I get people are really frustrated, and believe me, there's no one more frustrated than the way that we're performing again than me. I think I said to you lads the other day, it just feels like we're in a perpetual cycle of every January get a new manager and hit the reset button, and then we find ourselves in a position like this where we're churning out terrible performances and players don't seem to be playing for the badge of the club, never mind the manager. But I think fans have a responsibility as well. You know, we're a football club, and you know, I think you know better than the prawn sandwich brigade at Manchester United if you just, you know, have this attitude of, well, there needs to be better. Well, you know, you've got a responsibility to communicate to the club what you want in your football club. So, you know, fan groups need to get together and establish what is it we're protesting about. Because I'm an Everton fan, and it's not clear to me when people get out of their seats on, you know, what, 21 minutes or 27 minutes or whatever it is, what that's about, other than people are unhappy.
They did clarify last night, Pete, you might not have seen it. There was, because I think when it first came out, there was a bit of confusion because people weren't sure. I think that was the first thing, maybe, you know, what is the... There's a lot of anger and negativity, of course, about where we are. And there's a lot of, you probably argue, divisive figures within the club. And it's different for each individual about who they maybe look to blame and who they want to move out and et cetera, et cetera. And I think those who are behind this have then sought to try and clarify certain points. So just let me read this out. You may have seen it, you may not have seen it. This sort of sets out what the protest is about, what the key points are. So, point one, the campaign welcomes and acknowledges, this is Farhad Mashiri, his financial commitment to the club. However, the campaign draws attention to the governance and management of the club during these last 6 years. Point number two, the campaign recognises that without investments and fresh recruitments in the board and executive teams, the prospects of change in fortune in the club remain slight. Point three, the campaign recognises that the fans' emotional investments and financial commitment to the club are totally aligned with Farhad Mashiri's investments. We seek the same outcome, a better return for both our investments. We call on Farhad Mashiri as major shareholder to make the management changes necessary to see an improvement in performance. We call on Farhad Mashiri to communicate in future through official club channels, i.e. not TalkSport and Jim White. And finally, we call on Farhad Mashiri to engage, meet and discuss concerns with the fans. So they sort of clarify things there because, like I said, I think there was a little bit cloudy.
It's a list of whinges. Look, point number one, that, you know, decisions over the past 6 years, have been poor or what have you. Hang on a minute. How many Everton fans were calling for managers' heads? Vast majority of Evertonians wanted Coleman to go. I think pretty much all of us. Everybody wanted Allardyce out before he was even... that he sat down eating a pork pie. Pretty much everybody conceded it was ready for Silva to go. You know, Ancelotti is incredibly unfortunate. So I'd say to those fans, you know, wait a minute, you were all behind these decisions. And look, when Steve Walsh came in, yes, it was a car crash. But I think we're all rubbing our hands together thinking, look, we've got investment now. And this is the guy that... discovered Kante and Vardy, and when we got Idrissa Gueye, you know, what a player he was. For whatever reason, these things haven't worked out, but I think hindsight's not always a wonderful thing. And look, this guy's come in, and fair enough, decisions haven't worked out, but we've been incredibly unlucky as well with, you know, injuries and things going against us. And then in terms of the other complaints, I mean, yeah, you know, fair enough that the club could maybe communicate a little bit better and clearer with fans, but this has just become a list of grievances. And I think what that makes for is a poor protest. You know, Protests work by having clear visions and clear communication. We can't accuse the club of poor communication and then launch a protest with about 8 different points on it. That's not a protest. That's, you know, I just don't think it will be effective, and I don't think it's the right way to change things, because I don't think the cause of change is particularly clear. I just think people are feeling frustrated, and this is something they feel they can do about it. But obviously, I'm happy for other people to have other opinions.
Of course, and that's the idea of obviously of any kind of discussion. And our show, we've always, you know, the three of us who do this show, and we all have different opinions quite often, and that's exactly how it is. And this kind of thing is certainly not for everyone. Like you've said there, Pete, you know, for yourself, you've got your reasons as to why you feel it's not right. Me and Peter are probably a little bit more into the camp, you know, everyone's got the right to the process. We're understanding the frustration. I mean, my big thing, communication is a massive thing for me. I think the club's communication is terrible, absolutely terrible. We don't hear from anyone. You know, I haven't seen Machine for I don't know how long either. I know he's going to be at the game, apparently, against Arsenal. And, you know, when he's sending texts to Jim White on TalkSport, that just, for me, smacks of amateurism. You know, it's one of those, all he's got to do there is, if he's backing the manager, which is fine, he can come out personally and release a statement. He can do something through the club's official channel and say, no, this is the situation. We brought this manager in, whether we like it or not. This is the direction we want to go in. This is what the plans are. We've got to be a bit more open and honest in certain areas. Some things we've got no right to know, by the way. And I'll always back that particular point, because I think in the modern age, I've made this point before, I think that we feel as fans that we've got the right to know the ins and outs of a duck's backside when it comes to the running of a football club. And we haven't, you know, 20, 25 years ago, we'd have absolutely no idea, and wouldn't be asking these kind of, or some of these questions, should I say. So we shouldn't know everything. You know, it's not how these things work, but we should know more than we know, is what I'd say. But Lee, you've been quite quiet there and not voiced your opinion yet. What are your thoughts on Monday night?
You're trying to say it's unlike me not to pipe up, is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
No, normally you'd chip in. Normally you'd try and talk Pete down there, you know.
No, I was absorbing all your comments. Too far, I think they've all been well made. I tend to agree with both points. So I'm a bit fancy on this, because Pete is right. There isn't just one particular culprit. As if say, right, we're all united against this particular issue. If that issue goes, we can fix it and move on. It's not, because everyone's got a different opinion of who's at fault. Some think it, like we said, some people think it's Brand, some people think it's Ken Wright meddling about too much, some people think, why have we got Baxendale in there, some people think it's Mashiri himself. I do agree with Pete a little bit. You know, there's been rumours, albeit conjecture, that apparently, you know, Mashiri now wants out and he wants to sell the club. And, well, again, it's just rumours. Apparently that's been kiboshed, but sometimes there's no smoke without fire with these sort of things. And, you know, that's the last thing we'd want. You know, Mashiri's come in. He's invested an awful lot of money into the club. You know, he's acquired 92% percent of shares. He's put 100 million quid towards the initial development of the ground. You know, so, you know, he's cleared the debts. You know, he has injected a lot of cash into the club. The problem is, I would point the finger at him is that, you know, he has probably got it wrong on a few appointments, and I do think sometimes with Mashiri, I think he does get involved too much. If we are led to believe the rumours, you know, he is very close to a few different agents. Sometimes it's him that's involved in the recruitment side of things and making calls over and above the director of football and the manager, and I think that causes itself some problems. You know, some of the rumours are that it was him that was responsible for Iwobi, for example, the last minute, because of his relationship with the agent, for example. If they're true, then, you know, that undermines the director of football, undermines the manager, because some guy is playing fantasy football above them, you know what I mean, trying to bring in players that don't necessarily fit the way the club wants to recruit. So, you know, if that is the case, then, you know, that's where we do need, what Peter was saying, a long-term strategy. You know, we do need somebody to come in, whether it's Brands or another director of football, and say, right, this is the direction we're going in. And like I said before, it's up to the club to really communicate that. you know, Villa's CEO came out the other day, chief exec came out the other day, and was very clear on, right, this is now stage two or stage three or whatever he said of the process. We're now going to be, you know, getting involved in other clubs in other part, other countries, so we can loan between clubs, basically do what City did. And that's fine because the fans are on board with that. They're on the journey then. Okay, they've timed it quite well in terms of they brought Gerrard in and they, you know, while the club's buoyant, why not come out and send this message? So the communication piece is massive. You know, if we are struggling towards the foot of the table, which we are now, but we all feel we're on a collective journey, I think it makes it a bit easier to absorb as fans and go, well, you know what? We are going to have a bit of a downer here, but, you know, we can see where we're going. We can see there's an identity. I think we tried that with Silva. I'd say Potter is akin to a Silver type appointment in the fact that, you know, he was a young manager, played a certain style of football, and I think he had initial successes. I do think Silva was undermined, and obviously over the summer where we didn't get the likes of Zuma in and a few others, and that eventually led to his downfall. But we tried that method; it didn't quite work. So let's bring somebody else in with a bit more experience, right? You know, to try and fit. You know, almost go the opposite end of like a young up-and-coming manager. And that didn't quite work because obviously Ancelotti left. So it's just been a perfect mess and a perfect storm really with Everton. But I do think we do need a long-term strategy. All this short-termism has to go. I think as fans, that's one collective where we can all get on board and we all agree with this short-termism of quick fixes, signing players the wrong side of 30, you know, and things like that. It's just not going to work. And we know that's not going to work. We have to get behind a manager that's going to be hopefully here for, you know, 4 or 5 years and recruit players to a certain style of play. And I think that's where collectively we all want to go. But I do hope we don't, you know, we don't force the owner out, because if all of a sudden he did go, you know what, I've laid the foundations for Bramley Moore, I'm off, I'm going to sell the club now. He'll make a profit on it. He'll make a tidy profit on it right now. You know, he may even sell it when we build the ground. You know, a lot of people are saying that. Well, probably would, because he'll then make a fortune on it then, because then we've got the ground. But in the meantime, there needs to be a collective, and that the club need to be much better at communicating that. They really do. That's paramount for me, because otherwise we've got what we've got now then, which is loads of discontent in all different areas of the club.
100%, and you know we are where we are now. And I mean, one thing that I will say is what this has done is it's certainly focused the media's attention on the club. I think some people still think that certain people get a bit of a free ride from the media and aren't questioned. I think now we're starting to see more and more questions being answered. I think, you know, we've had quite a bit of coverage in recent days from various Everton fan media, whether it be on BBC, there was on TalkSport, Sky Sports, on Toffee TV, have done quite a bit with the national media. So it's certainly getting a bit of traction in that sense. And obviously the game is live on Sky Sports on Monday. So it's, you know, it's going to be an interesting watch within the ground, outside the ground, you know, on the television, to see how this actually plays out on Monday. Because the camera's going to be waiting for it. That is for sure, you know. But like you said, you know, I think it's important to discuss it, and you know, there's no right or wrong answer. You know, like Peter said at the start of this particular section, whether you choose to walk out or not, for whatever reason that might be, just respect other people's decision in what they choose to do is probably the key message, because we all want the same thing, and that's Everton Football Club to be successful. So just let people, if they choose to leave, then let them go, you know. And if you choose to stay, respect that decision as well. Totally up to the individual themselves. Doesn't make them less or more of an Evertonian, that's for sure. But obviously, the side part to the protest, it almost seems, is the actual game against Arsenal on Monday. And we're going to round this week's show off with a look ahead to that in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast, where we're going to pick things up and look ahead to the Arsenal game. Obviously, like I said before the break, it's almost as if it's a bit of a sideshow, if you like, a bit of a side part to what is planned in terms of a protest. But there's a game there to be won, and important the players put in a level of performance that was better than what we saw against Liverpool, Brentford, and those games that came before, to be perfectly honest. That Arsenal are a funny side. Lost the most recent game to Manchester United 3-2. They hit and miss. They're certainly better home side than away side. Mikel Arteta seems to be under pressure every other week when Arsenal lose a game. But we know they've got talent. They've got a few really, really good youngsters in the side. They've got a bit of pace. You know, obviously Aubameyang on any given day can cause any defence problems. But Peter, what do you think going into the game, if we forget about the protest, etc., what are your thoughts on the game itself? Do you think we can come out of the game with something at all?
I think so, yeah. I think the players will obviously be hurting after the derby. They'll be hurting after recent results. What I hope doesn't happen, I hope the players aren't going to be overly anxious awaiting the 27th minute, knowing that something could potentially be happening. I think it's vitally important that up until that point, the fans are as vocal as they can be. I think the fans really need to back the players from kickoff. And if the protest is going to happen, we need to make sure that up until that point, we've given absolutely everything to back the players and to show them what our support is all about. I think that I still look at the squad and still think that we've got the quality to go toe-to-toe with Arsenal. It depends on formation. It depends on which Arsenal turn up as well. You know, like you've just said, the Arsenal is so hit and miss. One week they can be brilliant, another week they can be dreadful. So I think a lot depends on how Arsenal set up and how confident they are. I think they were actually unlucky, to be honest, to lose the game against Man United. I watched that game and I thought that they, you know, as an away performance, I thought that they played really well. And I think Odegaard is really starting to hit a lot of form now. Smith Rowe as well, I really rate him. I think they've got some very, very talented players. But again, I just feel that if the crowd can get behind the team and really put the pressure on Arsenal, I'm hoping that we can have a really good battle and performance and hopefully get a result. I'm certainly more confident going into this game than I was going into the derby on Wednesday, put it that way.
Yeah, I think most people will agree with that sentiment, that obviously we have a bit more confidence. Obviously, talking of confidence, the players' confidence obviously is going to be low. They will obviously have heard of what is going to happen. I mean, on Monday as well, in terms of fans, they've had fans protest at Brentford and give them quite a bit of stick at the end of that game. They had a fan come on the pitch after the Liverpool game and obviously a bit of a protest again. The board of directors are getting it also. So the players will feel that, I'm sure. I'm sure that will be in the back of their minds. And it's how they react to that. Did he shrink and did he hide, or did he come alive and did he put in the performance? That's the big question. But judging by what the Mindy was saying in his press conference, it could be fit. Whether he comes straight back in, I don't know. He's had quite a bit of time out. He struggles to shake off the injury that he's had. He's had specialist treatments over in Spain. He may be fit, maybe may come back in. Could be a big plus for us if he does. But otherwise, we're going in with pretty much the same squad. Andre Gomes could be involved in that as well. But we're going in without Dominic Calvert-Lewin, that is for sure. No Tom Davis. But Pete, what do you think we can get something from the game? Are you feeling? Have you got any kind of confidence at all? Or do you think the players may be feeling this run of form and lack of confidence quite heavily at the moment?
I think we have to get something from the game. I think first and foremost, it's do not lose. And I can't believe I'm saying that about a home game against anyone. I think we've got to stop the rot. And you know, for me, if we lose this game, I mean, I'm sorry, but I just don't see how Rafa's position is tenable for any longer. We have to see something change in this game, and the players have to step up. I agree with Peter. I watched the Arsenal United game. I thought Arsenal were excellent. And they've got some cracking young players coming through. I think that Smith Rowe is a really tidy footballer, and he just seems to make the right decisions on the ball, and when he gets on it, always looks forward, comfortable running with it. I think he will be a real handful. I thought Martinelli was outstanding when he came on against United. He was the best player on the pitch from the moment he came on for them. Aubameyang's been a bit funny. He's been really off, and he's been nowhere near the Aubameyang in the final year of his contract. And Lacazette as well. You know, the majority of their goals seem to be coming from the midfielders around those players. So they're guaranteed to have the game of the life, aren't they, on Monday now. But yeah, you know, the team we have to respond, and the players have to be professional. If you know, fans do take action, they've just got to get on with it. That's what they're on the pitch to do, and that's what they're paid for, and that's what they're trained for. I think it's going to be a really strange game because, you know, never mind what Arsenal turn up, you don't know what Everton are going to turn up, and also if we lose the game, you don't know if the club are going to stick with him. It just feels like such a strange time in our history, and I hope it doesn't go on for too much longer.
Well, a bit of context there. Arsenal, before the Liverpool game the other week, they were unbeaten in 10 games, and the only game they'd lost before that, the 11th game, was to City, which was 5-0. So they got hammered there, but they went on an unbeaten run for 10 games going into that Liverpool game. And, you know, that Liverpool game was quite tightly poised until obviously they got the second goal, really. I think Mikel, you know, there was a lot of, if we all remember, we were linked with Mikel before Ancelotti came and things like that. And when we got Carlo, it was a big up yours to Arsenal, wasn't it, to say, oh, we've got Carlo, you've got Mikel. And he has had a tumultuous period there. But overall, I think he's doing a good job. I think he's doing a good job with a club that is very much in transition. Okay, he's been heavily backed recently in the market. But, you know, going back to what Peter was saying before, they have a clear identity under him. You know, they're working towards playing towards a certain way. And again, they're recruiting towards that as well. So, you know, they are on a journey there. You know, it has been well documented, mainly through Arsenal Fan TV, how up and down that's been. But, you know, they are playing some good footy this season. They are playing some good footy. And, you know, I agree with you, they were unlucky to lose that game at Old Trafford. They played really well against, obviously, a United team that, you know, are on a bit of a bounce at the minute. So they were unlucky not to come away with anything. So it will be a tricky game. They have got some good young players. I think Saka and Smith Rowe are outstanding, like you just mentioned there. One thing I really like about Smith Rowe, and you'll see it, is you don't see it with many young players, is he plays with his head up all the time. Constantly plays with his head up. He's always looking at the picture around him, and he always seems to pick the right pass. And, you know, he's obviously in goal scoring form as well. Scored the most obscure goal I think I've ever seen. Obviously with De Gea just on the ground. But, you know, no surprises there because Martin Atkinson was ref, and I think the only person worse than Atkinson is Moss, the Penguin. So I think both of them two are garbage. But anyway, going back to the game, I do think it's a very hard one to call this, because there's going to be a response. There's going to be quite a lot of emotion in the ground. You can see the players, you know, wanting to put a shift in. Hopefully we'll set up the right way this time, but just expect Arsenal to have a lot of the ball. Expect Arsenal to try and play out from the back. I mean, everybody's, you know, going absolutely nuts over Ramsdale at the minute. I don't know what's going on there. There's some real obsession with him. He looks a good keeper, but you know, he's made some howlers. I mean, in the Liverpool game, he was arguably at fault for three of the four goals. You know, but that's another story. Obviously, everyone's trying to lay into Pickford. But for me, if we're going to get any success from them, we have to be brave enough to press them high up the pitch. Press them right. You know, they always tend to take these goal kicks short to the centre back, and that's where Liverpool got success against them. Eventually, they made mistakes. That young Tavares at left back looks a really good player. He's keeping Tierney out of the team at the minute. But at the same time, he is vulnerable in terms of giving the ball away. And he was at fault for the goal against Liverpool that arguably turned the game, really. So it will be an interesting game. It really will. But I'm also expecting a really tough game. This isn't the Arsenal of last season. We're very fragile. I think, you know, they've got a decent team there. And they have got, you know, players who can play and players who can score goals as well.
Yeah, it's a difficult task. Any I think any time you play Arsenal, though, obviously, like we said, they are inconsistent in the hit and miss. We beat them last season 2-1 from the top of my head. So you know, I don't fear Arsenal. Arsenal haven't got this air of invincibility that they once had, but it's still Arsenal and they're still a half decent side. They got decent players, and I think given how the atmosphere could be on Monday, that potentially might play into Arsenal's hands. Who knows? As I said, it's all on how our players choose to react, and whether they want to hide or they do want to come out and show that they care. So it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be a difficult game, like you said, Pete. I think we've got to get something from it. I think it's vital. I mean, how many times have we said that? You know, we thought the Brentford game would be the game we can get something from. Should have done, didn't. The Merseyside derby, for me, you know, we were never particularly in it, by obviously for 15 minutes. Every game is vitally important that we pick something up from. We know what our run is. We know it's difficult, but it doesn't mean that you can't go and nick a point or get 3 points off some of these sides over the course of December. So it's time for the players to sort of stand up a little bit now, I think, and show what they can do. But let's have our predictions, if we can round things off with that. Peter, what are you saying? What are your prediction for the game?
I'm going to try and be very optimistic and say a repeat of last year and 2-1 Everton. I can actually see us going a goal down as well, to be honest with you. But I just hope we can rally, and I hope that we can just pick up and somehow, you know, if it comes down to a goal off someone's backside or something, I just think that we need to get points from somewhere. But yeah, I'm gonna be very optimistic and say 2-1 Everton.
Late.
I'd like to be as optimistic as you, mate. I think, as I said, I think it'll be a tough game. Do not underestimate this Arsenal team. I think they'll be pushing for European places if they keep their best players fit. So we're going to have to stop the rot as well. I'm going to say 1-1. And at the moment, to be honest, with the way the team is, I'd say 1-1. Are there any rumours on Mina being back, Mike, or not?
Yeah, the man just said he's got a chance. I think he did half the training session on Friday. So obviously a couple more days prior to the game that he's potentially got under his belt. I mean, I don't expect a lot, because you know, when you've been out for a number of weeks like he has, whether he can come back and start the game, I just don't know. You'd assume if he is fit enough, then he would start, given the fact he's our centre half. But I don't know. I wouldn't like to put my house on it. I can see him being on the bench, to be perfectly honest.
It's nice for the club to give him some paternity leave for 6 weeks, isn't it?
It might be a bit of a joke, that, but you do wonder whether that's got something to do with things. You just don't know. Just honestly don't know. I don't really want to speculate, but you know, we all know that we're a better defensive unit when he's on the pitch, and we'd like him to be on the pitch a lot more often than he actually is. So let's see if, you know, we come back from this injury. Let's see if we can get, you know, a lot more game time out of him. Pete, prediction?
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-1 as well. Stop the rot.
Straight to the point, like it, Pete. I agree. I think it'll be a draw. I'll say 2-2. To be honest with you, I can see us conceding, but I'll probably take it 2-2 as well. Just get a point and let's try and kick on if we can. Obviously, Palace the week after, then we've got obviously Chelsea coming up. So let's the next couple of games, there's no reason why we can't certainly get points from those games. But difficult game, like we said. Let's see what happens. Let's see how the process goes. Best luck to those, as I said, who are choosing to take part, and let's see what the reaction is on the back of that. Before we finish, really quickly, we mentioned it a few weeks ago, our friends over at Beer 52 still got a good offer on for you to get 10 free beers. Just pay for the postage at www.beer52.com/Trinity. Variety of IPAs and beers from around the world. I dropped off a few of the lads yesterday, so they're looking forward to getting tucked into them for the breakfast this morning, I'm sure. A bit of a fruity number on Pete's cornflakes, he was telling me. But really different and intriguing selection that they've got as well. You get some snacks of them in a magazine and things like that. So you want to take them off on the offer, go to beer52.com/Trinity, get your 10 free beers, pay for your postage, get them just in time for Christmas, and that will run until the 17th. So it's 17th of December, a week on Friday. So if you want to get involved, go across to that link and get some beers in for Christmas. That's us for this week. Peter, really appreciate you taking some time out on a Sunday morning. It was a bit early for me, actually, when Lee set up 9 o'clock. I wasn't too pleased on a Sunday morning, to be perfectly honest with you. Normally, I'm about to sort of 10 out of 10 riser on this day of the week, but there we go. But really appreciate you taking the time out this morning, mate.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it. Didn't enjoy the early alarm, but it was worth it.
That's Lee's fault. It's on him because he's got to play golf or something, you know, put other things in there ahead of the podcast. That's what he's all about.
I'm off to Walton Hall Park now to go and watch the women's team. So, yeah, it's all good. They never let us down there, Grace.
Yeah. Everyone get down to Walton Hall Park if you can, of course. The Everton ladies playing Durham, is it?
Yeah.
Today? Yeah, I'm so cool. Get yourselves down there. Lee, we're gonna chip in there. So you're saying you're turning your mute off like you had some kind of comeback?
No, mate. I was just gonna say thanks to Peter for coming on. Cheers, mate.
Oh no, I've really, really, really enjoyed it. Thanks very much, lads.
Not rising to it, son.
No comment there. That was too easy, no comment. And we will be back. We'll be back at some point over the course of the week to look back at the Arsenal game. Pete's getting married though, so he's putting other things in the way of the podcast there again. A bit of a selfish act that, but we won't comment any further. But here we look forward to Pete's wedding, and we will catch you at some point over the course of the week.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast: three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.